Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, knee-deep in training camp and seasonal allergies here in South Bend. Matt Fortuna in Chicago, my co-host. And then special guest today, it is the season for incredible weight room numbers. So that's where Bruce Feldman's area of expertise is. Freaks List came out this week. Bruce, thanks for being with us. And I guess I think the Freaks List is always a great read. I think for the first time in a few years, when I scanned it, I wasn't sure which Notre Dame guys were going to be on it, because it wasn't, there's not a Kyle Hamilton, there's not a Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. So I was interested when you were putting that together, if you knew a whole lot about Riley Mills or Lorenzo Styles or even Cam Hart when you got started.
I did not. Styles I knew of because, you know, he's second generation and I remember the name. Cam Hart, I kind of knew the name, but I didn't know the specifics. Riley Mills was the one that was the double take guy when the ND staff sent me kind of a list of the workout numbers, and it's not the whole roster. It's probably seven or eight guys, and Lindsey's on there because of his speed, obviously, and Tyree's on there because of his speed, although not quite to the degree maybe I was expecting. But then I was like, you know, like I noticed Riley Mills at first, but I was like, I got to look at this guy a little more, and then I have to kind of start to get into it a little. And he's what, you know, and you guys would know this certainly way better than me, but he's either from the rival school of Tommy Rees or from the same school, right? There's some
same
kind of
school.
Yeah. So the more I looked, I was like, okay, this is a really interesting guy. And in fact, I did a podcast for PFF yesterday, and they asked me, give me somebody on this list who you think will be a breakout player. And a lot of these guys are really good players already, or they're, you know, Kalijah Kansi at Pitt is a first-team All-ACC player. He's probably better than people realize, even that. But, like, Riley Mills was actually one of the first names that came to my mind on a breakout guy who, you know, who did some things last year. But I'm like, okay, you know, it sounds like he's definitely developing into his body. And you have some other guys around him who are already really disruptive, who are going to be game plan guys for the other team. So maybe he flourishes in that way.
Bruce, Freaks List has almost become like Phil Steele Day or Madden Holiday. Like, it's become this like unofficial marking of the season being upon us every summer, at least among us in the sports media space. How long have you been doing this exactly? How many different outlets, I guess, have you been doing this for? And and did you ever see it growing into what it kind of has become by now?
I did not. So I think I did it. The first year was 2003 or 2004. And it was back when I was doing a blog for ESPN.com. Myself and Buster Olney, we were both on the magazine side, and ended up, they were like, let's see if you guys do a blog year round. And so, you know, Buster's doing baseball, and I'm not dismissing it, but I'm saying, like, there's way, you know, it's a way longer season. There's spring training, there's a lot of other stuff. Whereas back at that time, you know, like, and I don't know, like, Matt, how old were you in 2004, right? You were probably, were you in high school even?
I was in high school, yes. Freshman year.
Okay. but like, college football's changed in the last probably 10 years where it's like, it's become more year-round. Like, there wasn't a transfer portal then. There wasn't, you know, like, you know, there's certainly recruiting and everything else. But, there was just a lot of different other things you're trying to generate content. And so I had this idea, and let me see where I can go with it. And I think it was 10 guys. And I did it at ESPN.com for maybe 7 or 8 years. Then I moved on to CBS, and CBS really embraced it. I'm not saying ESPN didn't, but CBS really did much more than ESPN. And then I moved on to Fox, and Fox was all about it. They wanted it to do Freaks Week, and it was going to be five different things, and the rollout was different. Then there was a minute where I was at SI. I don't even know if I was there a year at Sports Illustrated, but we did it there. And then I got to The Athletic, and I think it grew. It grew from, you know, from at one point it was 40, and then it was 50, and then it was 100. And so the part where I kind of was an eye-opener for me, though, the most was as a sideline reporter, I would go to, you know, I'd be on the field before games, and the other people who are on the field 2 hours before games and the warmups, who are not the players or coaches, are NFL scouts. And I started getting these NFL scouts who I had never met before but in person start to talk to me about Freaks List. That was all they, almost all they wanted to talk to me about. And I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And this, like I said, this is probably 6 or 7 years ago. And from that point, I realized, wow, I have a way different audience than I realized, that people inside football really are into it and they use it. And then in the last probably 4 years, I started talking to those scouts because they became really good resources of, I should maybe do this outside of FBS football, because there's a lot of other guys I'm missing out on and that are deserving and everything. And so I started doing it that way. And then, you know, those conversations have been great because, like you said, Matt, like, this is a primer for a lot of people. The season's around the corner. This is a huge primer for me to get ready for, you know, maybe not players I don't know about. There are players I don't know about, but like, there are, you know, just the, you know, there are conversations I need to have with people inside programs about what's gone on in the summer program or everything else. And that's where, you know, that's another aspect of this.
How the heck do you find guys from Wagner or Quincy?
Hey, don't hate on Staten Island on this podcast.
Yeah, I feel like this is a double fortuna because you got you got an Illinois school and Staten Island. So Wagner, it's funny. I know about Wagner just because, like, one of my brother's best friends was a player at Wagner when they were, you know, really good, I think. And they were playing against Sam Mills, you know, back when it was, I don't know if it was Glassboro State or whatever it was. But, like, so I was familiar with the school, but just with that player, Titus Leo. Part of what I do somewhere in the spring, I send a lot of emails out to staff all over the country. Like, if your program plays college football, you know, I probably tried to contact it. And so somebody said, and Titus Leo is a really good player. And then you just, you know, follow up and follow up, and maybe you get the position coach, or maybe you get a coordinator or a strength coach. And most times, not always, but most times, if it's a player who's that productive or puts up those kind of numbers, usually it's like they've dedicated something and the school appreciates it and they want to talk about the player. Quincy University was a different story for me. So about five, like I always do in the last few years, I've been doing a long conference call with the Senior Bowl staff, and especially Jim Nagy, who runs it. And I mean, that call like a week ago Saturday was 2.5 hours, and it's great because we just kind of share information, and like I come away learning not just about Freaks guys, but then there's like other players who you've heard, especially with linemen, who you've heard are really good. And this is a conversation we can have offline. We've heard are really good that we think in the media are really good. And he'll be like, yeah, that guy's not that good. You guys are, here's what we see on film kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, that's awesome information. But we get to a player from Quincy University, and I don't know, I've never heard of the school, much less the player, right? And so all of a sudden, you know, then I'm like, all right, this is definitely a follow-up. Let me see what I got. And it's so, BJ Wilson is the player, and I don't know when if I talked to Jim at 7 o'clock my time to 9:30, at some point by like 11:30 in the morning, I was talking to his position coach. And, you know, he's a really good student, and he's this guy who, he's from St. Louis, and probably, you know, maybe he could have been a walk-on at Mizzou or one of those places, but just ended up in Division II and has really blossomed. And, you know, there's a few guys like that. And are there bigger freaks in the country? Yes. Like, he's not Trevor Penning workout numbers wise, But this is a guy who's definitely on NFL scouts radar, and that's why he's in the bottom towards the 100. I'm glad to be able to give a little spotlight to him.
Quick trivia. Bruce might know this. Which famous NBA, former NBA coach, current broadcaster, used to be the athletic director at Wagner?
Oh, boy.
Here's a hint. He became most famous because his best player choked him.
Oh, PJ Carissimo?
Yep.
Wow. I do remember they had one of the first early big drop-downs. They had a D lineman from Virginia Tech named Horacio Maranta. And he transferred in there. I don't know if he dominated for the Seahawks. I imagine he did. But this was back in the day of this was back in the day where I think – you guys remember the movie All the Right Moves? It's a Tom Cruise football movie out of Pennsylvania.
I haven't seen it, but I'm familiar
with it. Oh, you got to see it. I mean, maybe it's not as good as I remember it being. But, like, anyway, but I think the quarterback in there was named – nicknamed the Rifleman. I think he played at Wagner, if I'm not mistaken. So, anyway. More Wagner trivia than anybody else.
My brother's godfather played football there. It's kind of my like tie to.
Do you know when he played? Was he a Hamline? Did he play for Wall Hamline or was that era?
Early 80s, possibly. I don't know. But Carlos was the athletic director there at the time. That's how I knew that trivia question.
Okay, I'm going to text you a name to text him. So.
Sounds like a plan.
That was more Wagner talk than I was expecting.
Expect a Shamrock bump for Wagner.
Or wanted. Yeah, our listeners are like, can we get back to Lorenzo Styles? As you're going through the Notre Dame list, you know, we talked about Mills a little bit. Hart was always unique when he showed up to Notre Dame because you just don't – I guess he was a receiver but quickly moved to corner. But like 6'2 as a corner, if you have any sort of – agility at all, that's kind of freaky. Well, because I think he was highest on the list for Notre Dame in terms of the top 100. What was sort of the feedback you got from him or on him from Notre Dame?
I mean, like you said, it's not just 6'2", he's he's 205 pounds. And then you're talking about the thing that really jumped out for me was anybody who was broad jumping over 11 feet, you know, I don't care if he's 6 feet, 170 pounds. That's pretty eye-popping to have that kind of explosiveness. And then there was, like, no, you know, like a bunch of these schools have, like, what I would call, like, kind of a maybe something that's a unique test that they do or a unique metric that they use. In this case, it was like a power clean output peak number. And his was really high for being, you know, a skill guy as opposed to, like, a linebacker, tight end, or certainly a lineman. And so I think that combination of things really, you know, like that is like when you talk about the frame that he has, that size, I mean, that's kind of like when LSU was recruiting cornerbacks, like in terms of 6'2", super athletic. Now, sometimes the guys LSU was signing was 6'2", and they'd come in at 171 pounds, and then maybe by the time they'd leave, they'd be 190. You know, whether it's Greedy Williams or they have a bunch of dudes who were there like that in the last few years, other than, you know, maybe not Patrick Peterson kind of thickness with that size, but you just don't see a lot of guys like that, right? I had one last year from UTSA, Tariq Woolen. I mean, and he lit up the combine too, but just 6'4" and, you know, vertical jumps in the 40 inches, broad jumps, like even further than Cam Hart. He's not quite as thick, but like, if you have, as you said, any kind of agility to go with that kind of length and explosiveness, you're going to probably make a bunch of money. You know, at the very least, you're going to get a chance. And then if you get exposed as somebody who just either isn't physical or, you know, kind of gets lost out there or really isn't somebody who has much change of direction, then, you know, like, then look, you're probably going to get beat a lot in training camp, and maybe you're not going to work your way into a spot, and you got to hope, you know, something else develops. But at this point, I think, you know, that's a really intriguing player.
Bruce, how do you define a freak? Is it almost like Nick Saban has his board of how he wants a certain corner to stand height wise, how quick he wants them to go? Like, and I ask this because, like, Michael Mayer, for example, right? Like, everyone knows that guy's probably going to be a first round pick. He's one of the best tight ends, if not the best in the country. He's not on this list, and I'm sure it's like nothing against him. Like, he's kind of like your typical really, really good tight end. But how do you, when you're sorting through this and you're sorting through probably more numbers than you care to admit, you know, how do you define what constitutes a freak?
It's the guy. I mean, the original definition was the guy that everybody in the program was like, whoa, he's kind of different in here. Meaning not like he's the best player necessarily. I mean, a perfect example is I got a front seven player from Alabama and it's not Will Anderson. You know, it's just like, and believe me, I tried. I'd ask, like, what do you think Will would, you know, just to have him somewhere on the list. To me, he is the best player in the country. And does he going to run 4.65? You know, whatever he is, he's just a great football player, right? It's not like he's slow or all, but like Chris Braswell, who is similar dimension, 6'3", 245, you know, but he's a 700-pound squatter, 405-pound power clean, and he vertical jumps almost 40 inches. You know, I don't think Will Anderson is quite as explosive as that, right? So in the case of Michael Mayer, I think I have a handful of tight ends on there. You know, one of them, and I don't want to, you know, feed into the Pete Sampson, you know, enrages the Deep South, you know, argument. But, like, let's take out Michael Mayer for a second. Let's take out Brock Bowers for a second. Like, you know, your alma mater, Matt, had a great freaky tight end who's now went with Ricky Ronnie to ODU, and he's 6'8", plus, not just like, I was surprised when Ronnie told me, you know, like his measurables is like, all right, he's 6'8", maybe that means he's 6'6 and a half, right? No, he's 6'8 and a quarter. And he's, you know, got a 40-inch vertical jump, and the numbers are crazy, right? And Gesicki came out of there, was, you know, super freaky athlete too. And this kid, probably even more so because he's bigger, you know, and it's not saying he's going to be a better player. And I think that's what tricky. Sometimes people look at it and go, and they know how good of an all-around player Michael Mayer is. That's not to say he's not a explosive athlete, because obviously you can see it. He does some stuff that's really unique on the field. But in terms of, like, you know, sometimes, and I'm not saying this is the case with him, but sometimes you have a guy who either wasn't able to train, you know, work out in the off-season program or test because they were rehabbing something, or otherwise maybe their just functional strength isn't quite, is a little different, or, you know, their numbers are good, but they don't want to put, you know, if you're the, especially if you're the, you know, the coaching staff, you have a guy who you think is a great player, but his numbers compared to these freak athletes kind of look a little bit ordinary. I think they almost don't want to show him that, because the guy may be a great player, but maybe vertical jumps, Michael Mayer vertical jumps 34 inches, which is excellent for a tight end. And maybe he broad jumps, you know, 10-1, which is still excellent. It's just compared to like Riley Mills' numbers, it's like, it's not quite the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weight room achievement, conditioning achievement, not necessarily a Saturday afternoon achievement. Yeah. And it's like, I can back you up where you're saying on Mayer, because I remember talking to people around the tight end room when he showed up. He was a 5-star prospect, looked amazing in workouts. I mean, like on-field summer workouts, but there was like his weight room numbers. He had some ground to make up, lower body strength getting where it needed to be. So it wasn't like he showed up and was like, you know, your Quentin Nelson type, where it's, you are a freak player, but also a freak in terms of the training aspect of it.
Yeah. On that 1-2 yeah. thing, like, so I don't think anybody who watched the, you know, who's watched Ohio State would be surprised to say Jackson Smith and Jigba is the best receiver at Ohio State, and yep. probably the best receiver in the country. He's not the biggest freak in that room. Marvin Harrison Jr. is bigger. He's longer. He's faster, and he's stronger. He's the number two guy on my list. Now, he's also a really good player too. He had 3 touchdown catches in that Utah game, but you know, like the better player. And look, Jackson Smith and Jigba probably belong somewhere on the list. His measurables aren't, you know, he's not 6'3", 205. He's shorter. He's, you know, he's going to run in the 4.4. So I think, you know, for the size, the numbers aren't like, wow. And I just think sometimes, you know, I think people are like, well, why is he not on there? He's a way better player. Yeah, well, that's not what this list is. It's not the 100 best players in the country.
Oh, that's very, very comforting to our listeners.
Yeah, I was going to say, Notre Dame is going to thank you that Jackson Smith and Jigba has some more motivation on September 3rd to like outdo Marvin Harrison Jr.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Segue into somebody who was a top prospect in his own right about 15 years ago, Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame's new first-year head coach. You'd sort of gotten to know Marcus a little bit. I think even going back to his Ohio State days, you know, you're plugged in with coaches on as they're sort of on the rise a little bit, which he was for 5-6 years. I was interested in, like, when you first got to know him, and maybe what some of your first impressions were of that time, because I think it went back before people really knew who he was, and at that point he was like kind of a second team All Big Ten player who would ultimately would have a very brief NFL career.
Yeah, he was a little on my radar because one of the guys who coached him at Ohio State early on, Mark Snyder, the old Marshall head coach, was somebody – he used to recruit New York, New Jersey, so I'd always see him living – when I worked for ESPN Magazine in New York. And so he was a – you know, like, obviously that was a loaded room. You know, you at one point you had A.J. Hawk, you had Bobby Carpenter, you had, you know – James Laurinaitis. I don't remember where whatever became of James, but, like, you know, those guys were all like, it was a deep group. And then Marcus, he was like, you know, this guy could be a coach, just he could have it. And then so when I was at the magazine, we did this, it was really a photo act. It was almost like the kind of thing you'd see in a GQ or a men's magazine where it was like kind of a style piece where we had five players who were all, you know, good college players, but not first round picks. And I think they called it Kings for a Day. And so the five players were Marcus Freeman, Graham Harrell from Texas Tech, Jarrett Dillard, who was a really productive receiver from Rice, Ian Johnson from Boise State, and Mitch King from Iowa. I think that was the five. And then we would take them all over the city. They would do like these fashion photo shoots and all this stuff. And it was like the full day of it. And I just remember our photo editor really connected with Marcus. Marcus was a little bit like 22 going on 35. You know, he just like Graham was I knew Graham the best. He was kind of just kind of silly and had it, you know, laughed his way through it. You know, Ian Johnson had been something of a little bit of a cult hero because, you know, the famous Fiesta Bowl, what, you know, Statue of Liberty wedding proposal or marriage proposal. And but it was just different. Like, Marcus really clicked with people there. I don't know if it was a conscious effort. Like, there's no, you know, I didn't think there was any reason for him to, like, just kind of charm everybody who was around there, but he just kind of did it in a very unassuming way. So, you know, I don't think I connected with him. Like, he was at Purdue. And I was like, oh, he's there and people are, you know, kind of excited about him. And then when he got to Cincinnati, we really kind of reconnected. And, you know, it's not shocking that he kind of moved up to be the Notre Dame head coach as fast. I didn't see this coming. But 18 months ago when he was in the mix for the LSU DC job, and I know the old head coach at LSU really well. And so I had heard about how that interview process went. I knew how much they, you know, Ogeron really, really was impressed by Marcus, you know, and I knew they tried to really put a full court press on Marcus and, you know, his wife had come down there and I think they, you know, really were hoping that they could sway him and sway her and get them to come. And obviously, look, I don't, you know, in retrospect, obviously the Marcus's decision was 1,000 times the right decision. I don't think anybody knew that he could be the head coach at Notre Dame, whatever it was, 11 months later or whatever the timing was from that decision. And I don't think if Marcus went to LSU, I don't think if he was the offensive coordinator, I think maybe that would have been different because that was to me the bigger issue for them at LSU. Now, I don't know if they're much better on offense, does that save, you know, their jobs, but just from talking to him throughout process, you know, and I'm sure you guys have been around him a lot and done, you know, gotten to know him well, like he's just a very, very impressive guy. And you could see why he's recruiting really well, because you can see how people, especially parents, could probably, you know, buy into him, and you can see why kids can feel like they can relate to him. It's not a knock on Brian Kelly at all. Brian Kelly was obviously, as you guys well know, he won everywhere he's been. He's a really good coach. Marcus is just different. He's generationally different. And I think it's a really interesting time for Notre Dame.
Yeah, Marcus and Ed Ogeron, as you know, obviously hit it off pretty darn well down there, to the point where a lot of people at Notre Dame at that time thought he was going to LSU. And I'm sure you've heard this too, Bruce, like one of the first calls Marcus Freeman made when he got the Notre Dame head coaching job was to Ed Ogeron to invite him to come up and observe a spring practice, which he took him up on this past spring. But that's a great what if that we've gone down before on this podcast. What do you think of Notre Dame's team this year? I mean, we've gone over some of the roster. We've talked about the new head coach. I mean, I know you can never really know what's going to happen with the new head coach until he's in that moment, but how do you see the season playing out for the Irish?
I think they're, from my look, I think they're a top 10 caliber team. I don't know if they're much beyond that. Obviously, you're breaking in a new quarterback. You have a receiver position that wasn't deep to begin with before, you know, last weekend. You do have a difference maker at tight end. I think they will be even better on the O-line, because to me, you have what I also think is really good for Notre Dame is I feel like Marcus was able to put together a really good staff. He kept some key pieces. You know, he brought back an O-line coach who's probably one of the two best O-line coaches in the country. He added a running back coach who I think is as good as there is from watching how he coaches at, you know, his time at USC. I just think there's a lot of interesting pieces there. I just think that, you know, for them, and this is just my opinion, you guys might disagree, but like for Notre Dame to take the next step as a program, I don't think it happens this year. I think there's and we'll find out in the first week just how close they are to Ohio State talent-wise. But I feel like for them to take the next step, I think that two things have to happen. They need, and this is probably not brain surgery to say, but they need more difference makers on the defense to be able to compete with Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, and or Ohio State. And they need somebody to find a special quarterback, because, you know, you can have really good tight ends and they've had really good offensive linemen. I don't know if they've, you know, has there been an elite running back there? I mean, I'm looking at Pete's eyes.
I mean, Kyren Williams was a really, really, really good college
back. He was
back,
a really
good
running back. And he was a good all-around running back. And I feel like it's a slight, you know, to me, he's probably as good as they've had since the run in, like, when Dorsey Levens had to leave, because it was like that, how stacked the room
Different
was.
Different era, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, am I wrong? Like, I know they have signed, you know, like, guys who are high four and low five-star guys, running backs who just didn't either live up to it or they were over, you know, I don't know what. But so there's been that piece of it. They've had some receivers, but not enough of them, right? You know, like Will Fuller was super dynamic, you know, and they've obviously had as good a tight ends as anybody. But I just feel like, is there a special quarterback? You know, I don't know. I don't want to invoke Brady's name here, but like, it's been a while, right? You know,
Tom Brady played at Michigan, Bruce. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I don't mean the good looking Brady. I mean the one who was all muscled up.
Oh, Brady Quinn. Brady Quinn. Oh yeah. Yeah.
That one, right.
But I agree, like Notre Dame needs the something more than Ian Book at quarterback. Like not somebody who can just manage a game, but actually make the play that wins the game. And Book won 30 games, but I'm not sure I would point to him as the reason they won them. And on the outside, this is probably a good segue into Chancey Stuckey, who you know a little bit. I mean, Notre Dame is going through camp right now, essentially with five healthy scholarship receivers, which is just it's roster mismanagement that Notre Dame is in this position. But here they are. They have to deal with it. Stuckey's recruiting has been really good in terms of the guys they have coming next year, which is not going to help them right now. But I do spending some time around Chancey, it's sort of like Marcus in the sense of like, oh, I completely understand why you'd be a really good recruiter and a very popular coach with your players. And I think I don't know if you got to know him while he was at Clemson or he was working at Clemson, but you have spent some time with him.
Yeah, it was a really random deal. So it was at one of the one of the playoff media days. And, you know, you have an hour to talk to whoever you're going to talk to. And I don't I think I was asking Chancey Stuckey, who was kind of an off-field assistant at the time. He may have been an analyst. I'm trying to remember what his title was. He was not a position coach there, certainly, before Baylor. And I remembered his name. I remembered who he was from him as a player. But I'd asked him something about somebody else, and then I was just making small talk with him. And then I found out, I don't want to say he had another life, but it was like when he lived out here, and I'm here being on the West Coast, and really made a run at an acting career. And I was like, ooh, this guy's really interesting. Like, I'm going to end up spending way more time at this hour, which, like, it's not like Clemson is Georgia where, you know, you better use every minute of this time because they're not going to let anybody talk to you for the rest of the whatever the, you know, 364 days and 23 hours of the calendar. This is it. But it's still valuable time. And I was like, oh, I got a bunch of stuff on my tape recorder from Chancey Stuckey, which I was not expecting to do. And so towards your point, Pete, I agree. Usually those guys, if they work at it, and obviously with his, you know, life experiences, it shows he's gonna work at it guy. Because I know that's what it was like when he had a family and trying to get an acting career off the ground. But there was something like with Marcus, where I definitely felt like, okay, he's a little different in terms of is able to connect with a lot of people and tell his story and kind of charm you without trying. If that's a, you know, that's a kind of a weird way to say it, but that's what I felt from him. A little different than Marcus, not quite the same, but just was like, yeah, I could see how he can connect with probably a ton of people across a bunch of different spectrums.
I was at Clemson's on-campus media day, I guess it would have been last month now, and man to man, they were raving about this guy. Like, it was, and again, I know he played there, but coaching-wise, he was there in an off-field role for, I think, 1, maybe 2 years, and he clearly left an impact there. You mentioned Hollywood. What do you think, how quickly do you think Lincoln Riley gets USC up to speed here? How good can they realistically be this year?
Realistically, you're going to use that word, huh? the word doesn't fly out here. So I think they'll be really good on offense. I think, you know, they will, to me, resemble a version of Lincoln's Oklahoma teams. Really good on offense, good quarterback play. I don't know if they'll run the ball as well as Lincoln did. Like, when I said that, Notre Dame has one of the two best O-line coaches, I think the other one I would consider is Bill Beatenbow. He's so good in the run game. And he didn't leave Oklahoma to come with Lincoln. And I'm not saying that they don't have a good O-line coach, but just like, I think that identity was unique to them. They have some running backs. You know, certainly Travis Dye was very productive for Oregon. Their O-line is good. It's not great. But I think the biggest issue is going to be they were so bad on defense last year. And I've told this story before, but my crew did the UCLA-USC game late last year. And you had what felt like dead men walking for that staff. You know, like Clay Helton was fired 2 months earlier. It's a bunch of independent contractors. And it was the worst looking USC team I have seen in almost 20 years living out here. And it wasn't even close. And yeah, the transfer portal will help, but I don't think it's going to flip it enough where, you know, my colleague Colin Coward is talking about them like they can be a national title contender / playoff team. I could see them possibly winning 10 games. The Pac-12 is not that good. The schedule, it's not like this is a year where they have Alabama in the, you know, non-conference. I could see them maybe getting 10, but realistically, I feel like they're a 9-3 kind of team in a lesser version of, you know, what is a Power 5 league right now, right? You look at it, Oregon has talent, new coaching staff, the rest of, I don't want to say that division because it's not a division anymore because it's one division. But what we know, those North teams or the schools previously known as the North teams, feel like that's a pretty, you know, underwhelming group. And then there's two teams around USC and what was the old South, which is Utah, who I think is good, really good, and UCLA, who I think is pretty good too. And then that's it. right? You got a really bad CU team. You got a really struggling ASU team. You got Arizona, which I think it will be much improved, but they won one game last year. Much improved is 4-8. So I feel like USC has, you know, 9 wins is very realistic. 10 wins is possible. I don't think they're good enough on defense to run the table, but that's, you know, the expectation for a lot of people looking at Lincoln and Caleb and Jordan Addison is they should at least win 11 and be a top 10 team. And I think that's not looking at their defense.
That's the end of Notre Dame's schedule. The beginning is Columbus. And we talked a little bit about their receivers there. I mean, you've certainly spent some time around them, you know, with Fox and whatnot. Like what is sort of your expectation for that squad this year? I mean, it seems like they're built like they're always built. Like they have elite, or not always, but in the last few years where they have elite receivers, great skill position talents, and a very good quarterback. And they're waiting on their defense to sort of click into gear a little bit. How do you see that Ohio State right now?
I feel like more people than not are picking Alabama to win the national title. I think right now my hunch is Ohio State would beat Alabama in the national title game. I think they're that good. We did one of their games last year. It was such a mismatch because it was against Maryland, and Maryland was down 3 cornerbacks. That's the worst team to be down 3 cornerbacks against. I mean, it was just a disaster for them. But you have a really good quarterback. You have a great running back in Travion Henderson. You have the deepest receiving room in the country. I think they've shored up their defensive line because the last couple of years, two years since Chase Young has been out, you know, you had a dominant player in the front, which covered up some stuff. They didn't have that the last 2 years. They had young guys who were okay and not much more than that. And they were really suspect at linebacker. And honestly, they had great DBs and they didn't. You know, Denzel Burke is a good, really good young player, but like, I feel like there's going to be a bunch of pressure on Jim Knowles, who did a really good job at Oklahoma State. He's a Duke guy and he's a really, really sharp guy. Jeff Hafley made a big difference when he was the DC there in 1 year, and then he bounced to Boston College. He did a great job there. He fixed a lot. I don't know if they have as much talent as on defense as what Jeff Hafley inherited, but I think they're so good on offense. I think they're so different than everybody on offense personnel-wise that if Notre Dame can stay with them, I think that's, you know, if it's a game, and I don't know if Notre Dame fans will like this, but if it's a game in the fourth quarter, if I'm a Notre Dame fan, that's almost a win, because I think that would be a huge statement for them to stay competitive in that situation, right? You know, I just think that team is so good on offense. As long as it's not like 45-17, you know, you're talking about a largely inexperienced quarterback going into a game that by all accounts to me is going to be a wild kind of offensive shootout that you're going to have to keep up with 5 scholarship receivers. You know, like, I mean, this is probably another story kind of thing, but like, if you were to take out the best players at Notre Dame and say how many guys would start in Columbus, and Michael Mayer, I'm sure, would, and you probably have a couple of offensive linemen who would, I don't know where you go after that. There's not going to be a receiver who's going to start. There's no running back who's starting over Travion Henderson. There's probably, you know, maybe Foskey. I don't know. There's probably a few guys on defense. But, like, it's not going to be a lot. And then the difference between, I think Tyler's talented, but this is, he's going to, you know, the other guy is the most talented quarterback in college football, right? And he's got, like, the gap. How many receivers at Ohio State would start at Notre Dame? 6? I mean, how many guys in that room? I know you, Matt, you smirk, but I know you probably agree.
No, right? Yeah, I mean, like, all of them.
Yeah.
So last year, I think I was doing something with one of our old colleagues on this. Like, if you just went by recruiting ranking, if you took the top 10 combined receivers based on their 24/7 composite, I think Notre Dame had one of the 10. So, and it was Jordan Johnson who was a complete bust at Notre Dame before transferring to UCF. Lorenzo Styles was just after that cut. So it's a tough, tough ask. And yeah, that's like Notre Dame needs to figure out how to get more, you know, Marvin Harrison Juniors or Jackson Smith and Jigba. I mean, that's, they don't have somebody like that right now. Lorenzo Styles, maybe, but
I mean, look, in their defense,
Taylor Stars is not close.
In their defense, almost nobody else has them.
Well, I mean, those guys, remember the two best players opted out of the Rose Bowl, Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. And oh, by the way, Jackson Smith and Jigba is just going to go for 300 something
and
yards.
And Harrison had three touchdown catches in that game, by the way. You forget about it because Jackson Smith and Jigba put up like it was like he had the video game, you know, controls and nobody else knew how to play, you know, kind of situation.
I agree with everything that you both just said. I think if we did the same roster breakdown of Michigan and Ohio State, we'd find very similar, Michigan and Notre Dame being very similar as far as their deficiencies compared to Ohio State. And Michigan beat Ohio State pretty good last year. Now, different circumstances, rivalry, snow, I get all that. But I do think, I don't know. I mean, it's a daunting task. I'm not trying to minimize it, but I think...
Yeah, your guys who would be the starters, the Aiden Hutchinsons, the Dax Hills, those guys have to show up in a huge way on that stage. And look, you know, maybe Notre Dame will have a guy who has four TFLs and a forced fumble, and that's how it gets going. I mean, look,
Tweet out about Riley Mills when it happens.
Yeah, believe me, I'll ad nauseum this story language as well as I already have.
What's your schedule like? Do you know where you'll be week one, week two, week three?
Week one, I'm in studio. Week two is my first road trip. I'm on the road with the Big Noon Show. I was normally in studio while they were on the road.
Austin, right?
Yeah, Austin for Texas hosting Alabama. And then we have Nebraska hosting Oklahoma. And then it's a bunch of Michigan, you know, either road home, you know, there's like, it's a lot of Big Ten. It's a lot of Big Ten this year.
Yeah, I think Fox and the Big Ten are, they've got a good thing going at the moment. That's what I hear at least. Maybe we'll wrap up on this. As somebody who works with Brady Quinn, what do you want our listeners to know about Brady Quinn that Brady Quinn doesn't want them to know?
Ooh, good question. I'd like to say like, yeah, that's a hairpiece Brady wears, but that's not true.
Not on this show. Hey, you're like one of our first non-bald guests, and you're older than both of us, so congratulations.
Thank you. And that actually means a lot to me, in fact, more than it should. Brady's actually, I'm going to say one nice thing about Brady before I say the stuff I want to say. Brady's actually a very supportive teammate in the to me in our meetings and everything. So in that regard, he's good. So the real thing on Brady is he is very smart. I can see how he got into Notre Dame and how he was able to graduate from there, because there's a lot of times we'll start talking about stuff, and if it involves like something related to money or finance or things like that, it's hard to keep up. Like, he's talking and he's talking fast. It's hard to keep up. I can't imagine. I don't even know if he has these conversations with Matt. So there's that. But then there's also the 11-year-old kind of in Brady, where it's like, I'm looking at the text and I'm like, okay, I don't have time for this, you know, kind of thing. But he's an interesting guy, you know. So I'm glad that he's, you know, I was on the road with him for 4 years, I guess, as his sideline guy. And, you know, I can't imagine, can't tell you how many times I've asked him, so walk me through pin and pull again or whatever, you know, where he loves his NFL stuff. And when we did an NFL game, man, he was in his own element. You know, like it was when Brian Daboll was the OC of the Bills, and it was Josh Allen's rookie year, and we had the Lions in the other game, and Patricia was the head coach, so it was a lot of Patriot stuff. And, you know, obviously with the Weiss connection he has, I think it's, you know, I think he's very into that. So, you know, I want to tell you some bad stuff about Brady. Brady's probably the hardest working guy on our show, you know, but But yeah, I cannot confirm or deny whether it's a hairpiece or not.
I think there's an obvious joke, like he's eclipsing Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush here, but I'm not going to make that joke. So
yeah, it's funny because I think he has a good time with those guys. It's funny because like there's definitely something. You know, the first time we were working together, he was like, "Hey, I'm gonna text you my number," and I said, "Okay." And I said, "I think I have it." I read him the number. He goes, "That's my parents' number. How do you have that?" And I was like, "I don't know how I have that." But he's an interesting guy. At one point, I think we had this thought. There was a year we did the Apple Cup. It was a blizzard. It was when Minshew was the quarterback, right? And so we were trying to drive back from Pullman in a blizzard in the middle of the night. And, you know, like, I don't know if you guys have ever had this thought, if like the plane goes down, you know, whatever, but I just remember thinking like, I don't know, Joe Davis in the car. And obviously Joe Davis was our play-by-play guy. Now Joe is the top voice for Fox Baseball, do World Series, and he'll be awesome at it. He's great. But at the time I remember thinking like, ooh, if we crash, who's going to get mentioned first? Joe or me? And, you know, because Brady will be first. And then I was like, you know what? It'll be like gold medal gymnast's husband dies, former NFL quarterback. And then it'll say us. So Alicia's still the big headliner. Brady's the other guy. Brady's the dot, dot, dot after.
The few times I actually see a celebrity on whatever plane I'm flying at the moment, that's my first thought as well. Man, no one is going to remember me if I go down in this flight.
No, we had something once where one of my producers and we were joking about when we work with Tim Brando, and it was like, at one point Tim said something like, a legendary broadcaster does such and such. It was like, no, veteran broadcaster does such and such.
Yeah, we're all just veterans. There's no legends in our midst.
No legends in our midst.
Well, Bruce, thanks for carving out some time for us here on the Shamrock. We'll definitely have a follow-up podcast when I start coaching youth basketball again this winter, since your sort of how-to coaching guide of youth sports was, I think, one of my favorite stories of the summer.
Thank you. It is definitely my favorite story I've ever done. I don't know about you guys, but I never wrote anything personal, and it was very personal, yeah. And I was pleasantly surprised how people responded to it.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I definitely got a sense that the NFL Flag Football League in Southern California is a lot more serious than Northern Indiana, because there was sure as hell no combine for first graders here in South Bend.
Yeah, we actually have another combine this Saturday. So I got talked into coaching a summer league, which we're doing to the end of the month, and then my son has a combine for another league on Saturday, and it's almost to the point where it's like, okay, are we doing? Like, he plays club soccer too, but it was like, are we having him play too much football? Are we like letting him dictate too much? Because it was like, maybe we want to pump the brakes a little on the football, buddy.
You know? It'll be too much when you do a freaks list on the 12 and under division next summer.
We're going to have a conversation as soon as the podcast goes off the air about something, and then I'm embarrassed to say it.
All right. Well, I think, yeah, we're going to have to fast forward to that, but stop hitting record first. So, Bruce, thanks for joining us here on the Shamrock. We appreciate your time, your insight on Notre Dame, the Freaks List, all that good stuff. We will definitely have you back on the pod in the future.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure. Even the Wagner stuff.